Sana means a healthy mind in a healthy body and radiance. Sana Wellness, the podcast, explores the world of modern wellness through relatable conversations with experts and thought leaders to inspire and empower you on your wellness journey so you can shine your light brighter. I'm your host, Kylie Jane. We're so glad you're here, Sana Light. Ali, thank you so much for joining us today on the Sana podcast. We're going to be speaking all about the Mediterranean diet, what it is, and why it's the world's healthiest diet. So welcome.
Thanks so much, Kylie. I'm excited to be here and to share all of the knowledge that I have on this wonderful way of eating.
At the moment, you're working in kind of nutrition technology, but if you can just tell us a little bit about your background and what led you specifically to the Mediterranean diet.
I love the backstory. I'm definitely partial to my backstory with this diet, because even coming from a background of Greek heritage, it still wasn't so obvious to me. It still took a few tries of what I really wanted to niche down into. It's kind of funny how it happened, but I knew I always wanted to be in like a service field, and nutrition was kind of that, I guess, a monumental piece for me, and just how it could help any chronic condition. But I really saw it take off when my mom, who has an autoimmune condition, saw a change in her diet. So I was like, okay, I know food is medicine, but what can I do to help the majority of the people that I see on a daily basis, just on a daily, like on the street, you know, in passing, what is happening? So in the United States, we have a very large increase in overweight and obesity that can contribute to some other conditions, not necessarily a linear link to that, but also just chronic conditions in general. Diabetes being a precursor to a much larger condition like heart disease, which is the number one killer for, I believe, men and women. Definitely women, but I'm not sure where men falls on that spectrum. But it's so profound in our society that what can we do differently? And who else is already doing that? So it wasn't until I've gone abroad a couple times just to kind of, and even one of the times I was studying the Mediterranean diet in there for my grad program. And I was like, this is really cool. You know, how do I build on this? But I had no idea I could make this into a business and I could make this into the thriving community that it is today, the Mediterranean nutritionist. And I came back from this wedding that I attended abroad for a very near friend that I grew up with. And I was like, what have I been doing for 2 years? I've been trying to create this community that had no voice. It had no outlook, nothing. And I was like, it's the Mediterranean diet. It's the Mediterranean lifestyle. So let's build on it. Mm. And every day for 6 months, I posted something that was relevant to that lifestyle. So if you scroll back into my Instagram 2-3 years ago, you'll see just like beautiful pictures with like a caption that describes the Mediterranean diet and that lifestyle. And that's how I built the community. And after 6 months, the pandemic hit and I was like, all right, it's time to open. It's time to open and start seeing people that I can help on a day-to-day basis, whatever that condition is. We know, and we'll probably get into this later, the conditions that really benefit from this, but how can I just help someone eat healthier? And really the Mediterranean diet fit, because it's something that I had been living my whole life without really putting a label on it. Mm. I think that's why it took me so long to figure out that this is what I should and what I wanted to be doing, is because it was almost second nature. And I didn't make that connection until that second, third, fourth time abroad. And I was like, oh, wait, this is what we should be doing. This is how I can educate with a very open mindset and being mindful with food and living that lifestyle in a positive way.
Amazing. Amazing. And that's, I mean, you touched upon, you know, it was obviously part of your background and something that came quite naturally to you and something that was perhaps quite simple. And I think that's what I really love about the Mediterranean diet, is that it seems so simple at first when you look at it, like, why are we not all doing this, right? But I think for a lot of people, like you said, just in our modern lifestyles, you know, we're living such busy, frantic lives, and, you know, it's much easier and quicker oftentimes to just grab something on the go that may not be, you know, super nourishing, super nutrient dense. But I think with the Mediterranean diet, it brings us back to the basics. And these basics are so beneficial, right? Sometimes it's the simplest things and the, you know, simple ingredients that can really have the greatest benefits. So what is the Mediterranean diet? If we had to break it down into what does it look like? How would you describe it? Or what kind of foods are we talking about?
Yeah, this is my favorite question, because the answer is, it's hard to define when we're looking at the Mediterranean diet as a whole, because there are, I want to say 25 different countries that border this region that all have their own take on it. And the example that I use for this is like Northern cuisine and Southern cuisine in the United States. We're all part of the same country. So same region in the Mediterranean, same thing. But the way that you eat in the North versus the way you eat in the South, you know, Southern comfort food, all that, like, doesn't really exist in the North, at least not as like a mainstay dish. So even though it's the same region, it's still very different. So what we can take from that is look at the principles that exist on that plan. And those principles include more fruit and vegetables. Of course, it's a primarily plant-based diet because a lot of these foods have really good climate to grow some of these delicious ingredients. There's a lot to do with seasonal eating, a lot with that produce. So that's one of the things that I 100% incorporate into a lot of my programs is the seasonal eating aspect, even though we're not in the same seasons necessarily with different climates, but we can learn to eat simply just like that. Fruits and vegetables. I use the example of 90% of Americans don't get enough fruit and vegetables. And that's probably similar statistics to a lot of other areas in the world as well, where we can do so much for our health. It's really funny because at the end of the day, that's my message as a dietitian is get more fruits and vegetables and you're going to see such a difference in your overall health. So two main pillars right there, and everything is still going to be that plant-based aspect. Then we have our beans and legumes. Beans and legumes, super easy to get, highly underrated superfood. I use superfood in a very light term because I think it's more markety than anything, but it's very basic. It's a basic ingredient you can find anywhere. Dried, canned, double boiled. That's my new thing. One of my clients showed me about the double boiled lentils that heat up in like 90 seconds. That is incredible. Like very easy ways to eat this way and super healthy. Then we have our whole grains. So there's a lot of diet culture that goes into different diets and specific things that I could really go down a rabbit hole on, but whole grains are essential. Whole grains, just in general, they have lots of vitamins. They have, you know, fiber and protein, and they come in so many different shapes and forms, so many of them. So getting more whole grains in our diet is going to help balance our blood sugars and help keep our cholesterol at bay and lower that down. So we shouldn't, you know, fear these foods, which a lot of people do where I live. And it's sad to see that that culture, that diet culture has been so entrenched where these good, healthy foods, yes, they're carbs. All of these are carbs for the most part until I get further down into this list here. But all of those carbs are going to be beneficial for improving your health. And if we're avoiding those because of other reasons that we have to get our nutrients from somewhere else, and they're probably not going to be good choices if we're missing these critical pieces. So we have fruit, vegetables, whole grains, beans, legumes, nuts and seeds. So still a plant, but these are going to be mostly fats and they will have protein in them. And then we have our big mama piece of this. This is the olive oil. This is the extra virgin olive oil that the majority of lipids on a program or a diet or eating pattern. I really want to be careful with that diet word, even though it is how we eat, not necessarily a list of rules, but that's the main source of lipids. You know, I never actually measured out how much I eat per day, but it's probably close to 5 tablespoons if I had to guess, because, you know, I'm just putting it on everything and I'm cooking my food in it. So it's easy to get that, but that is definitely the biggest fat in my diet. And it's beneficial because of the polyphenol content, which acts like an antioxidant and can reduce inflammation, helps our brain health, helps our joints, pretty much just helps everything. So when it comes to oils, there's none better. And that's the biggest gold standard. So if you could do two things for your health tomorrow, it would be introduce extra virgin olive oil as your main oil in your diet, get it more often, mm-hmm. and add one more serving of fruit and vegetables. And that's one of the easiest ways that you can start. But looking at that framework, this is the framework that you can apply anywhere. You don't have to live in the Mediterranean to do that. Mm. So that piece, and I'm sure I'm missing one or two of them in there, but primarily a plant-based diet that you can, oh, fatty fish, of course, there we go. Primarily a plant-based diet, but they're going to eat what's local to the region, and geography-wise tells you that the fish is going to be one of the main sources of protein just by where they're located in the Mediterranean. So, right. And not only that, is that fatty fish just happens to have incredible health benefits. We have our omega-3 fatty acids in, you know, fatty fishes, that are salmon being one of the biggest, tuna is another one. White fish is not so much, but it's still great to incorporate into your diet. Just doesn't have as many omega-3s as the other ones do. And that's going to be great for brain health and inflammation in keeping those chronic conditions that we see so much in the States at bay.
Amazing. And I love that you said, you know, there's two things already that you can do quite simply. And the fact that it is plant-based. And when you hear about, you know, the word plant-based, it's become very, I would say trendy, I guess, in recent years. But people also associate that with going completely vegan or cutting out all kinds of animal proteins, but it's not necessarily about that. It's about basing your meals and your diet on plants. And that's that the Mediterranean diet is such an excellent example of that, because we're going to talk about the pyramid, but the base of your pyramid is those fruits and vegetables and your grains and just basically the, you know, whole foods, right? Foods that haven't exactly. gone through excessive processing. They're still have, you know, tons of fiber and nutrients and minerals and all of that. And like you said, you don't have to be living by the coast necessarily to live in the Mediterranean to be able to apply the principles of the diet. It's something that we can, you know, look at and see, well, these are the foundations of it, and how can I apply that to my life or my situation in a way mm-hmm. that will be sustainable, right? Because that's the other part of, I don't want to say diet, but living a healthy lifestyle yeah. is, how does it fit your life, right? So it's not to say you need to have a Greek heritage, or you need to, like you said, live in the Mediterranean, but just taking these principles that have so many incredible benefits for us and apply it. So I know you mentioned there already the incredible benefits, the omega-3s and, you know, the antioxidants, but, you know, why do you think the Mediterranean diet has been ranked? I think it's the best overall diet 5 years in a row, according to the US News and World Report. But why do you think we are looking to the Mediterranean diet for these principles in our modern diets and lifestyles?
Yeah, it's such a great question, because there's so many fad diets out there. It's like, what is the moment? And I'm so faded to all of that noise now that I don't even know what's trendy. And that's a good thing. I think I filtered my feed to just not pay attention to it. Although sometimes I'll see something on TikTok and I'm like, I'm on the wrong side of this. But I don't know what's trendy right now. I think keto has been the biggest one that I remember in recent memory. Yeah,
probably.
But when we're looking at this ranking, and I can't believe it's been 5 years. I remember when it was ranked third year in a row, and I was like, wow, I'm on to something. This is definitely the way to be. And it's funny because it's still using the word diet, and we talk about diet versus lifestyle, and there's very many diets that are quote unquote fad and trendy that will be disguised as a lifestyle. And I actually still see people living a Mediterranean lifestyle very much like that as well, where they're saying it's a lifestyle, but they're very much dieting. Like, oh, well, I do this, but I don't eat carbs, or I do this and I don't eat that. The minute you do something and you're avoiding something for an alternative reason, like I'm going to gain weight, or it's usually I'm going to gain weight, or some other reason, that's still dieting. You're still following a diet. It's, you know, you can call it the Mediterranean diet all you want, but if you are eliminating things out of fear or alternative reasons that does not involve allergies or just the fact that you don't like them, then you're still dieting. So I think that this diet specifically, ranked best eating pattern, we'll call it, for the last 5 years is because it's accessible. Anyone can get any one of these foods in some way, shape, or form, whether they're fresh, frozen, canned, you name it, anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the world. I'm a firm believer of that. Even in the most remote places of the world, you can find beans, you can find grains, you can find fruits and vegetables. They may not be the same fruits and vegetables that you would get at a Mediterranean market. If you live in Alaska, that's probably not going to be the fruits and vegetables you go to. So funny, I was watching this TikTok video about someone living in Alaska commuting to their grocery store. It's like an 8-hour round trip. So they were planning for the entire month. I was like, this is insane. Wow. This is awesome. It's an awesome process to watch. So you're probably not going to be able to buy fresh vegetables at that point, but you can buy frozen vegetables and it's a great alternative. You can buy frozen fruit. Great alternative. You're still getting those beneficial nutrients, but it just may look a little bit different to you, to the next person, to someone that lives in a different state or even country, but they're still the same foods. And I think it's because it's accessible. Anyone can start it tomorrow for the most part, as long as you don't have too many allergies to very main specific things. Anyone can start it. And the fact that it's accessible and easy, I think it was ranked easiest to follow, best diet for diabetes, ranked pretty highly for, I think, heart health as well.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's number one on the list for all of those things, no other diet, no other eating pattern in the world can claim that title. It just, you know, keto can be super expensive. There's a lot of fat on that. It's going to give you short-term results. It's not something that you can do forever. It's, like I said, it's expensive. There's a lot of other things that happen to that. I've seen horrible things happen to my clients by doing something without knowing the long-term effects of it. And that brings me to, I think, my final point with this one is that it's researched. It's well-researched. It's well-documented. It's been in the research since the mid-50s when Ansel Keys started doing the 7-country study. And it grew legs. They're still studying that. They're still doing that research. And you can't undo, what is it, 70 years now of diet research. No other diet on the planet has that documentation. So if you want to start something that you know is going to be helpful for your long-term health, and you're not hurting yourself in the process for a quick-term result, whether it's weight loss, whether it's whatever else it could be, it usually is that. So if you want something that you know that it can't hurt you, unless, of course, you don't know about an allergy, this is the way to go, because it truly is that lifestyle where you're simply focusing on adding foods to your diet versus removing them and restricting them in certain forms for a certain period of time.
Right, completely. And that's the other thing about it is I know you have that same philosophy, and this is, you know, part of the Mediterranean diet is it's not about restriction or exclusion, like you said, unless, you know, if it is something you dislike or an allergy, but it's not telling you to, you know, cut out whole food groups. And I know when I speak to clients, you know, if they come to me and they say, what about whatever it is, let's use keto, like you mentioned before, I want to do keto. And, you know, first question is why, but also I always say, could you do this for the rest of your life? And often the answer is no. And if that's your answer, it's not going to be sustainable. And it also is not going to be pleasurable, right? Because as soon as you're excluding something or restricting yourself from something, then that's probably all you're going to be thinking about. You know, the more we're told we, as human beings, we can't have something, the more we kind of want it. Whereas the Mediterranean diet is more about abundance and, like you said, what is available, what is accessible. In most places in the world, you can access these foods. Like you said, it'll look different in different places, but it's more based on abundance and variety, right? Which is also super important for sustainability. And it's tasty. It base, you know, the olive oil, and you can get, you know, great olive oil, but it's also the herbs and spices that are so simple, but can add so much flavor. And it doesn't have to be fresh. It can be dried, but it just makes such a difference. So it doesn't equate to, you know, rabbit food or plain lettuce leaves with carrots or anything like that. And I think that also ties into the, you know, the pleasure aspect, which I also love in the Mediterranean diet pyramid. You know, the base of that pyramid is focusing on joyful movement, enjoying meals together, that kind of connection aspect, and yeah, kind of the family time, right? So it goes beyond what we're eating to also bring us back to the basics of joy and pleasure and connection, which is such a beautiful, you know, and also important part of nourishment or nutrition.
Absolutely. The pyramid is one of my favorites, I think, ever crafted. And I know in the States, we don't have the pyramid anymore. We have a plate that I really enjoy the plate teaching clients because it's more visual on like your meal at the moment. How can you build this out? And I have tons of versions of what a Mediterranean my plate would look like on my Instagram. I think I do one every couple months just to show different variety and taste and things. But the pyramid itself is like that. Think of it as just like a gradient. Like, what do we need the most of in our life? And yeah, food's great, but it's not the whole picture. In fact, if we're not moving our bodies joyfully, and I love how you said joyful movement, because that's exactly how I describe it and how I live it now. I think, at least with our society that I see, the gym culture is, you know, if you're going to lose weight, or you're going to achieve your health goals, you have to spend hours in the gym. You have to grind, you have to do all of this to really make a difference. And to be honest, that's not enjoyable to a lot of people. Maybe that was enjoyable at a time in my life, but now I'm like, you know, I'm hopping on my Peloton and picking a ride solely based on the music, and I'm going to rock out for 20 minutes. And that's going to be really joyful to do. And even though I'm not in the mountains or picking for fruit or anything like that, like, I'm still finding that joyful movement in a way that works for me. Like, my joyful movement is not going to be the same as the next person's, but we have to remember to just move our bodies in a way that feels good. And that can be walking. It's free. Walking is free. Moving our bodies more. Sometimes I'm like, I have to take my own advice. I used to live in New York where my entire commute was walking. Essentially, I would walk 3 miles just to get to my office, and then I would walk all day. So when I moved to Texas, things definitely slowed down. And now that I work from home, it's okay. Let's break. Let's go for a walk around the block. Let's do something just to get sunlight and get out of the house. But it's still going to look different to every single person. But the joyful movement is such a powerful one that not a lot of us, again, we feel like we have to be miserable during our workouts for it to be effective. And that's not true. You know, you start to release some of that pressure on yourself, and you find that it's easier to do and easier to show up for yourself because you don't really feel like you're working out. You don't really feel like, because you're not dreading it. Maybe you have this after, like the afterburner, like sore muscles, and it just is not a good feeling. And every time you go to the gym, you push yourself so hard that you are sore for the next week. And then you don't do it again for another 4 weeks. You know, we're more focused on the consistency of it and finding something that you can do baseline multiple times that week and build on that habit. And then you can add more challenging things, but we all have to start somewhere. So that joyful movement piece is so important. And then the enjoying meals together and the connection is another huge one. How many of us eat our meals, especially lunch, at your desk answering emails alone? You're not connecting with anybody. You're connecting with clients. You're connecting with your coworkers over email, answering emails, but you're not really focused on your meal. You're not able to enjoy it. You've scarfed it down in 10 minutes and you don't even remember what you ate, type of thing. We're not bringing that connection and that awareness to our actual dish, which is a missing piece. You know, we can also do a lot for our health when we break for 30 minutes. You can do that walk lunch combo and just be present at your dish. Like, really analyze what's on your plate. Okay, well, I have a spinach salad. I have chickpeas. I have, you know, whatever is on that dish, just actually like say it out loud in your mind that it's there and identify what it is. You know, what are you having? But eating a meal together, and that's something the Mediterranean does really well, is the siestas in the middle of the day where you, everything shuts down. You just shut down, you go home, you eat for lunch. If we could bring one thing to the States, that is what I petitioned to bring.
That it was would like be an afternoon. Amazing.
Everyone goes home, eats lunch, and comes back to the office. With commutes, that would obviously never happen. But at least a solid time where you are able to take a break and not feel guilty for not answering emails during lunchtime. And it's something that we all face. I do it, you know, I do it too sometimes where you just, it's not possible. It's not possible, but we have to still carve out that time for ourselves. And if we don't do that, we can feel stressed. We can, that stress can lead into us not sleeping. And those two aspects alone, those not sleeping leads us into not wanting to move our bodies and not wanting to plan our meals. So it really does have a chain effect that we can't really isolate nutrition alone. It's not going to happen if we want to see changes in our overall lifestyles. We have to do every single pillar, and every single piece has to be addressed. And if maybe nutrition is fabulous and you're like, why aren't I achieving my goals? Well, maybe you sleep 4 hours a night and maybe you're working 12 hours a day. And that could be it. You're stressed, you're overworked, you're not getting enough sleep. And when you don't sleep, your body doesn't have time to reset, build your immunity, build your immune system, build up. You know, if you're getting sick often, that's a sure sign that something is off and that we need to slow down and focus more on the other pieces of that lifestyle connection. And in the Mediterranean diet pyramid, it's the whole bottom. It's the whole bottom of the pyramid. And then we start the food, and then we start some of the other things that filter in. And then our sweets and treats on top. So then when we're looking at that abundance and restriction piece, you know, we can eat all foods in moderation. Like this is, if anyone listening to this at any point in time is wondering, does a food fit in this way of eating? And it absolutely does. That question should, we need to erase that question. Does this exit food fit in our diet? If you like the food and you want to have it, absolutely, it's going to fit in your diet. But we need to give ourselves the permission to eat that food, knowing foods don't cause conditions. An overabundance of things, eating that one specific type of food, I mean, we still will never know. We'll never be able to do a research study on that. That would be very unethical. But it's usually not the food itself. It's how we have the rest of our day planned. It's how we eat that food with everything else, or a mixture of everything else, not sleeping, isolating time, not, you know, laughing. Oh my goodness, just laugh, just feel good in the moment. But it's that togetherness, that connection that that pyramid really focuses on that we miss a lot, where at least where I live, I've lived in a couple places in my adult life. And I would say, especially New York, everyone's in a hurry, but
yeah,
you know, it's nice for a while, but you really want that time. You want that time to connect with yourself, with your meal, with your family and friends. And we shouldn't have to feel guilty on doing so.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think this also ties in so nicely with the blue zones, which are just parts of or areas in the world where they've done extensive studies on the populations living there and found them to be the longest living, healthiest populations. And it touches upon exactly what you've mentioned now, moving naturally and not in a punishing way, right? The world's longest lived people don't, you know, pump iron or run intensive marathons, putting, you know, a lot of stress on their body. And not that there's anything wrong with those things if they're enjoyable to you, but their environments kind of nudge them into moving without thinking about it. So, you know, you mentioned the walking, you know, are you able to walk a little bit more or dance or just incorporate something that doesn't, you know, have to be spending a lot of money? And then that downshift. So the stress that comes with constantly being on and constantly moving or feeling like you need to be doing something, you know, that stress leads to that chronic inflammation, and which is associated with every or most age-related diseases. But, you know, the blue zones also call us to look at routines to help us shed or manage that stress. So the connectivity, the sense of purpose, the fun, like you were saying, you know, laughing more, the wine at five, not that you need to be drinking wine, but I love that.
I forgot the wine. How,
the wine.
You know what? I have it open. It's in the fridge right now, but yeah, how did I forget the wine?
The most important part. But yeah, speaking of the wine, I know, so at the top, you know, you mentioned the top of the pyramid, you have your sweets and treats, you have your wine, maybe dark chocolate, and you know, should we be drinking the wine, or, you know, it doesn't give us an excuse to start drinking it if it's not part of our current, you know, diet or lifestyle. But, you know, I know a lot of people joke like, oh, well, you know, drinking is great for your heart and has antioxidants. But, you know, how do we find that balance and moderation with the sweets and treats and the wine?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you said it exactly how I would. It's not a reason to start drinking if you don't currently drink, because you can get anthocyanins from other foods too. It's the resveratrol in the red wine, but it's not a reason to start drinking. It's enjoyed with a meal. And I think that's one of the things that really struck me when I was in Italy studying the Mediterranean diet. And it was a wonderful course that I took, my very last class in grad school. And there was, you know how we, like in Texas, we have pitchers of water or like coolers of water everywhere because it's freaking hot all the time. But in Italy, there was like a pitcher of like lunch wine that you would buy a sandwich and then you would grab a glass of wine to go with it. It was kind of incredible. Not big glasses, obviously. They are very managed portions, but you just have it with your meal. And it's always consumed with your meal. It's like this drink is stimulating your stomach, preparing it for food, your aperitif, really. And that's not, you know, we do happy hour and there's usually no food in sight. It's like you're trying to forget your day. You just want to let loose. And it's not how it is in the Mediterranean at all. It's very much enjoyed with food. The idea is not to feel an effect from it. It's to enjoy your friends and family and to stimulate your system for digestion. So even just the cultural outlook on that is so different, that if you want something in moderation, you can still have it in moderation. I think alcohol in general, and it can also be applied to how we view certain foods. Like I think today happens to be National Donut Day. And we have these random food holidays and I'm just like, I think there's a food holiday or a couple food holidays every day of the year. You know, that food holiday is not a reason to celebrate that food. We can have that food any day of the year. And if we rework our schedule to only consume the food on a day that we should be celebrating it, we feel like we're out of control around it. We have no sense of control over when we have that food and when we do have it, how much we have of it. So if we take ownership of those choices, know that the scarcity, it's not there. Like we can get this food at any point in time, reassuring ourselves that we can get it at any time. And then that's when the moderation starts to take place, because you don't feel out of control of those choices. And I think alcohol could probably have a very similar outlook, where if we enjoy it in moderation and we enjoy it with our meal, we're less likely to overdo it at any one point in time.
Right. Yeah, no, completely. I 100% agree. And this is something, you know, the diet or the lifestyle is something that your whole family can enjoy. So, you know, it doesn't have to be, I know with a lot of diets that can be quite a point of, I don't know, conflict or contention in families if like mom's on one diet and dad is on some other diet. But with the Mediterranean diet, it's something that the whole family can enjoy, and we could all do with eating more plants, more vegetables. Are there any other misconceptions around the Mediterranean lifestyle that you've maybe come across that might be a blockage for people who are looking to, yeah, start the Mediterranean diet or eat a little bit more in this way?
Yeah, definitely a couple. And I know we touched on some of them today, but I think the biggest one being that we don't have to live there at all to really introduce these main principles that make such a big difference in our life, our family's health, our health, long-term effects and everything. You know, if you are a dieting household and you're always on a diet, you know, that's going to carry on with children and raising children to always feel the need to be on a diet. So not even really sharing that it's again, that life, it's that lifestyle. It's that introduction of new foods early on. It's providing taste and texture and lots of color when possible. And knowing that personally, I run into more problems with significant others, not mine. Thankfully, he's a great eater and he'll eat whatever I make. Mm-hmm. But my clients will say that their significant other or their partner is just set in their ways and will not eat this particular thing. And it's a big barrier because kids see that. Kids watch what adults are doing and they monitor that behavior. But I still think kids are great eaters. It just takes 10 to 12 times to introduce that food. So it's a lot of introducing them that food. So even after 4 or 5 times of trying to introduce tomatoes and getting a rejection, you know, still keep trying. If anyone is listening with young kids at home, it takes 10 to 12 times. And I believe one of the best reads is even Ellen Sauter that talks about that number of times and how to really introduce kids to these foods early on to get them to adopt it. And with this way of eating, it's something that you can introduce immediately, with as many fruits and vegetables. And that's usually what, I don't have any kids of my own just yet, but I've seen baby food formulas. It's very, you know, it's usually mashed up fruits and vegetables in some way, shape or form. So those tastes are already evolving and you can start introducing those foods a lot earlier than many people think they can or many people do. So knowing that you can introduce those foods, quite early on and keep trying and know that kids will eventually take to it. It's the older ones that I worry about sometimes, but even so, make it a fun game. You know, I will sometimes throw in random ingredients and I'll call it guess the ingredient of the day. And it's like something totally random, or like when I used nutritional yeast in in a pasta dish one time, I was like, this tastes off, but I can't put my finger on it. And I'm like, well, yeah, maybe it's half and half. I don't know. But yeah, the misconceptions, anyone can do it. Family, young kids, older adults, significant others. It's anyone can do it. Anyone can do it at any time. Other misconceptions is that if you don't have the correct or the correct culture that would fit in a Mediterranean region, that's a really big one I hear, because everyone has their own staples and their cultural traditions. And those are so important. And that's one of the reasons why I love this way of eating, because it happens to be my culture, but it's not everybody's culture. But everyone has some sort of bean in their culture. I mean, I don't know what all of the cultural beans are, but there are beans in every single culture. There are grains in every culture. Like that all exists. There's fruits and vegetables in every single culture. So what are those? What is the genetic makeup? Are they more root vegetables? If they're more root vegetables, that means they have more starch to them. So where can we find a non-starchy vegetable to introduce into that plan? So it's very much like that, where if you don't have the Mediterranean culture and you eat your cultural foods very habitually, doesn't mean you can't introduce more fruits and vegetables and olive oil into your diet. Not, you know, everyone has their own traditions, and it's important to preserve those. But where can we get more? And let's identify, you know, if you're listening to this and beans and rice and tortillas and avocados and tomatoes, you know, list out what fits the same pattern. Okay, what are your vegetables? What are your fruits? What are your grains? And how can you create a more balanced plate? At the end of the day, we're just creating balance. We're creating a balance of all of our macronutrients. We're not overdoing one carbohydrates with multiple different types of carbohydrates at our dinner. We may have one or two. We may have a non-starchy carb in the form of our vegetable, but where's our protein coming from? Does our protein also have carbs in it? If it's a plant-based protein like beans or even whole grain, it probably does. But where are we getting those, and how can we balance out the plate to be more well-rounded? It's expensive is another one that I hear. And The Mediterranean pattern has been born out of a frugal lifestyle. It was a peasant diet in the early 1900s because they were easy, accessible foods to get. Beans and legumes, grains, easy, accessible foods to get. And very little meat happened to be. So usually when we're shopping, I know my salmon is the most expensive thing in my cart, yeah. but my beans, my grains, and they're usually bought in bulk. So they're not going to be as expensive. And talking about fruit and vegetable in all of its forms, the frozen as well, I love frozen fruit. I love frozen fruit because I'm more likely to pop a whole bunch of frozen fruit into a smoothie than eat, you know, just fruit by itself. That's I like it cold. I like it in a smoothie form, but that's how I'm going to be getting a lot of my fruit. I do like the seasonal kiwis. I'm not a huge banana person, even though very beneficial if you're a runner or anyone that engages in cardio exercise. It's a great piece for that. I eat it for the health benefits on that one, but it's not my favorite fruit. But you can buy frozen fruit. Frozen vegetables are going to be a lot cheaper than fresh from time to time. You don't have to buy everything fresh or everything frozen, but the ones that you like the texture of when they are pre-frozen, I like frozen sweet potatoes. Those are fire roasted sweet potatoes. They're one of my favorites. And I just put them on a tray and bake them in the oven, and they're really nice texture. And they're already pre-cut for me, which saved a ton of time. So lots of really interesting things that you can do to save money, especially knowing that this diet was a peasant diet and it's not going to be expensive ingredients, maybe except for a high quality olive oil, but it's completely worth it.
Right.
100% worth eating that. You good quality olive oil.
You don't want to skimp on that one.
You do absolutely do not. Maybe you want to buy a cheaper one if you're cooking, because it does change the flavor a little bit of it. And I don't like using, if I'm like pan frying something, I don't want to use my really good stuff because the taste just is far superior. And if it burns the back of your throat, you know that's a good quality one. And there's a lot of other things to look for when you buy olive oil, but that peppery feeling in the back of your throat means you hit a good one. And if you like the flavor of it, it's like fine wine. You have to try them all. There's just so many different flavors and combinations out there. You can't just buy one olive oil. That would be the same as drinking the same wine every day for the rest of the, not every day, but drinking the same wine every time you drink wine for the rest of your life.
Right. You gotta have that variety there.
Absolutely. So I'd say those are probably my top ones. I probably forgot one in here somewhere, but expense, not family friendly. And those are the biggest ones. And not living in the region or the,
right,
the heritage are definitely the biggest ones that I hear.
Yeah. Amazing. And I love the point there about, you know, the frozen fruits and veggies and not completely discarding those as options, because like you said, one, they're, you know, affordable; two, they taste great; three, it's convenient, right? A lot of it is like pre-cut for you, pre-pep for you. And then also in terms of, you know, if you live alone, or maybe it's just, you know, two of you in the household, buying a whole bunch of fresh stuff, you know, can get tricky in terms of stuff going off. But if you know you have something frozen that's quick and easy for you to pull out at any stage, then it is great. So yeah, not to discard that as an option. And I know sometimes, so the carbohydrates, when people maybe think about the Mediterranean diet, they think about just lots of bread dipped in olive oil, or
pasta diet.
Yes, right, exactly. But I know, yeah, you've touched upon, you know, it's not just about bread and pasta. It's also you've got your grains and your legumes, and like you said, starchy veg. So there's lots of ways to get that, the carbs or the starch into your diet that doesn't equal pasta or bread.
Or I can, but when you really look at that plate, it's like 75% vegetables. If we're looking at, okay, we want 50% to be a non-starchy vegetable, throw a fruit in there if it's, you know, potentially breakfast time or a snack. And then we have our protein, which can be animal-based or plant-based. But that would be really the only piece of that dish that's not coming or stemming from a plant. Mm. You know, we have our grains that are plants, our nuts and seeds are plants, our olive oil is a plant. At the end of the day, it's coming from a plant. So all of these things, if you're looking down and you're finding that, wow, I have a lot of animal-based products here that are not, I'm not getting like the main pillars, the fruits and vegetables and the beans, legumes, nuts and seeds as like toppings and things, you know, where can I add that more? Where can I reduce a portion of something that I have on here and add something else?
Right. Yeah. So again, going back to that abundance and like, where can I add stuff, right? Instead of where can I take away stuff? Where can I, eat more? I love saying like eat the rainbow. I think that's just such a visually, and there you're talking about the plates, right? And just the visual aspect of, okay, when I'm looking down at my plate, what am I seeing? What colors am I seeing? If it's all, you know, white or a beige color of sorts, then how
Thanksgiving is traditionally beige.
Right. How can I maybe get a little bit of color in there outside of holidays and desserts? But Ali, so I know you've touched upon some incredible tips on, you know, how people can, if they're curious about eating in this way or making some healthy shifts, how they can maybe start incorporating some of these principles of the Mediterranean diet into their daily life. But do you have maybe two or three tips as a starting point of, you know, this is where I can start tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, good quality olive oil. Find it, use it, love it. Try a whole bunch after that first one, but start introducing that tomorrow. If you're not cooking with olive oil, start cooking with olive oil. If you're hearing the smoke point situation, we don't have time for that today, but it's 100% safe to cook with. And it's going to lose some of its integrity, but it's going to still have intact way more than any other cooking oil ever did, because those cooking oils didn't have polyphenols to begin with, or the level that extra virgin olive oil has. So start using it tomorrow, whether it's using it as your cooking oil or just finishing your dishes, making your dressing from home instead of buying a store-bought, using olive oil as a base with some lemon juice and Dijon mustard and a pinch of honey is the best thing that it's amazing. I just finished my homemade one today and I'm sad because I have to make more. It's so good. But getting a good quality extra virgin olive oil and start adding that to your plate once a day. Start there. Doesn't have to be every plate every day or every plate of the day. Just start using it in your dishes. The second would be to identify your fruit and vegetable content. You don't have to. There is targets that we want to hit as a society on a daily basis for generally healthy people. But that might not be your goal. That might not be your goal tomorrow, at least, because it's not possible to go from one serving of vegetables to four serving of vegetables the very next day and maintain that habit for the rest of your life. So add one more of each, add one more fruit, add one more vegetable, unless you're already at your target for each of those. But if you're someone that doesn't know where to start and you're realizing that you don't have a lot of color in your diet, that's another really easy place to start. Pick one, add one more of each serving to your day. And it could just be one to get started. Two of those things. And then fatty fish. Introduce one day of fatty fish to your dinners. Just one. It's not something you need to overdo on a daily basis. But start incorporating more fish. If, of course, you like it. And you don't get enough of it. It's more sporadic than consistent. In our house, we do fish on Mondays because we usually get our groceries Sunday or even Monday morning. And it's fresh. It's a fresh cut of fish. And that's not going to last long. You want to cook fresh fish pretty much within 24 hours of when you bring it home from the store. So incorporating that fish dish at least once a week probably be my top tips.
Amazing. Well, Ali, thank you so, so much. I'm a huge advocate for the Mediterranean diet, and it was just so lovely to connect with you, a professional and an expert who knows so much about it and who can share just some really approachable and sustainable ways that we can look to the Mediterranean diet for inspiration and really just, yeah, incorporate those traditional healthy living habits of those populations that we've learned so much from and we know to be good for us and scientifically, you know, sound, but also fun and pleasurable. So it was really amazing to connect with you today and learn more about it.
Amazing, Kylie. It was really great chatting and thanks for having me. It was a nice reminder. It's always nice to remind, you know, why you want to promote something and how it can help so many listening. So anyone listening, it's quick, easy things that you can do on a daily basis and can absolutely change your life doing so.
Yeah, completely. And Ali, where can people find you or connect with you? I know you have your Instagram page, which is beautiful. So is that the main place where people can find you these days?
That would be the easiest way, I would say, which is just at Mediterranean Nutritionist, all one word. That is my main page. I am lightly on TikTok, but usually for just fun reasons. I don't post a lot over there. I don't even know if I know my handle. I think it's Mediterranean Nutrition because the S did not fit in there. So it may be Mediterranean Nutrition on TikTok, but my main platform is Instagram. And then I have a really great Facebook community that you can join through my Instagram page as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for connecting with me. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.